Hello, haulers. Mariner here. How are you doing? Welcome to the Net That Haul in our sixth pre-season, I think, of the show of the 21-22 season, where we're really now getting into the nitty-gritty in more and more detail, as hopefully you've been following us, and you'll see that. As always, I'm joined by the crew, Les Hibbo this week, who's on shore leave. But we do have Nima back from his honeymoon in the Lake District in the north of England, and also fresh from hosting Hall of Fame number two, Tom, on Tuesday on the Compass show. He stole my keys to the castle. That's what he told me anyway. How are you doing?
It's been a mutiny on board. Thank you, Mariner. Thanks for the warm welcome. It looks like there may be a violent coup en route in the Net That Haul team.
Well, I've been called a mug, look.
Look at that, swag.
How are you doing, Gabe?
I'm doing great, Mariner. Thank you. Nima, good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks. I've just about managed to get the dog to calm down, but let's see how this stream goes. I'll let her say hi, and then I'll put her back down. Bella, who's that? Look, you're on air. You're going to be a famous little bear.
Yeah.
Hey there.
There's another one. We're going to have a face-off between Oliver the cat and Bella the dog. <100 win. laughs> Right. Anyway, let's keep going whilst you're looking after Bella. Hopefully she won't bite you or anything in mid-show. Who knows?
No, I have some stuff to keep her distracted.
What, food?
Yeah.
That's normal, isn't it? Right, let's get these announcements out of the way. So, as I say, please do hit that subscribe button, because we're going to donate to charity when we get to 1,000 and 2,000 subscribers. Become a hauler. Join us. And as I say, we'll be giving to charity. So we're nearly there. So we're not far away from getting our checkbook out for the first 1,000 subscribers. So let's try and get there before the start of the season, guys. That would be amazing if we could. It costs you nothing, but it costs us something. And don't forget as well, we are a pod. So if you are still working from home or now back on the train, make sure you download it and give it a listen. Nemo, what number are we at on the pods now, downloads? I think it's getting quite...
Yes, we broke the 2,000 downloads recently. Obviously, we're celebrating 1,500 not so long ago. So it's a nice big jump.
Fabulous. So I can't complain about that. So that's brilliant as well. And also, I think it's actually like a preliminary for the football content awards rather than the main vote. But we've got to get onto the shortlist first. So please do give us a vote as well. And you can find those links either on Twitter or Insta by tagging our handle in the posts, which I think that we can share them again. And they're also, I think the links are in the comments below as well. So cool, right? And Mini League FG1XNB, do give us a job, do join that league. There's about, I think last I looked, around 400 people in it now. Join the crew. Hall of Fame number two, Tom, Big Man Bakar, and others, and try and beat us. And to remind you, we've got Matt Whelan's book, FPL Obsessed. And we've also got a one-year subscription from Fantasy Football Fix as a prize as well. So take us on. You never know. I might even throw a few mugs in. Take us on and get a shout-out every week in the show as well if you're in the top, I don't know, three, five. I'll decide. Right, so crack on. So let's go. Last week we spoke about goalkeepers and defenders, considering fixture difficulty, value, and stats. Value made a lot, actually created quite a lot of debate, and I like that. This week, our attention turns to the huge, and it is a huge pool of midfielders, with the hope of pointing you in that direction of some value picks, some on-field, using on-field stats to get what I term production picks, and also picks which are probably best with respect to fixtures. Gabe's going to continue his pre-season matchups and put his philosophy hat. It's really hard to say that word at this time in the morning, in the context of FPL. And of course, don't forget the other shows which we've already done this preseason, because they are all still valid. So do go back, get those bite size, get those cups of coffee, digest all these other shows in little bite sized chunks between now and, well, the first game will have been played now in 2 weeks, won't it? It's Friday night, right?
Friday, exactly 2 weeks.
We're just under 2 weeks away now. So it's starting to get to the end game. So get onto that content now, digest it, and hopefully it's going to help you. But anyway, as always, this is what we're going to do now. Certainly in the matchup show, I'm going to give Gabe the floor to start with and set the scene. And just to let you know, I actually messaged him and said, what the are you on about?
Literally. That's...
I'll let you go, mate. There you go.
Okay, so welcome back to our mini segment of a mini philosophy segment here. So today's what's been going through my mind, I guess, in the past week is, you know, since the game launched, you know, everybody has their own process, right? For me, I dive right into it, and I just start like everything, start filtering everything and trying every different kind of team. So we fill ourselves with this knowledge, right? And we think, you know, we're growing in that knowledge that we fill ourselves with. Empty your cup is in reference to a famous conversation. You learn this, this comes from Zen Buddhism. So it's a famous conversation between this very academic scholar, Tokusan, and Zen master, Ryutan, I believe is how it's pronounced, but I'm not sure. And it's just he comes to the Zen master, Tokusan comes to the Zen master, and he wants him to teach him about enlightenment and the path to enlightenment and all of that. And the Zen master invites him for tea, and he starts pouring the tea. And he doesn't stop pouring the tea, and then the tea overflows the cup. And the guy tells him, stop, stop, stop. And he's like, well, why should I stop? He's like, well, because the cup is full. You can't fill it anymore. And the lesson is to really kind of adopt lessons or make sure they're genuine and true to our own spirit. We do have to, like, sometimes just get rid of everything, of all the information, and become that empty vessel. Another kind of like a term for it is beginner's mindset. And adopting a beginner's mindset allows you to have an open mind. And that open-mindedness, I think, can help us in life and in FPL as we are about to, embark on a very grueling adventure.
Well, there's been some great comments in here. So first of all, I think Bungle nearly got himself thrown out his own chat by saying, isn't that an innuendo or something? Isn't an innuendo? Empty your cup isn't an innuendo, like the one said. So the next thing is that then we've got Late Riser, empty your cup as in chug your drink.
that's one way to do it, for sure.
So the first lesson of FPL from Net That Hall this week is get pissed and pick your team.
don't listen to people that say don't drink an FPL. Definitely drink an FPL, because if you don't drink, your cup will be full and then you can't fill it again.
Oh, crikey. Right, before I set you off with your first matchups again, because we'll do your matchups first, Gabe, with your four teams. I'm just going to quickly run through the chat and just say hello to a few people as always. So we've got Nehal, hello, mate. Ramanthan, hi, man. Niels was in eight very early. He was ready for a whole lot of loving. 15 minutes before, we've got Eric Castillo in as well, asking questions well before the show even started. Dread FPL's in. Right, who else running down the list? They're just busy talking to themselves. Bungle's here. Hello, Bungle. Thanks for doing the moderation. That's right. I don't think we need much moderation at the moment, but it's just in case. And if nothing else, it's fabulous just to keep the chats going. We've got Shams in. We've got Jared. Hello, Jared. We've got, who else? Crikey. Blue Danube guy. Blue Danube. Late Riser. Hello, mate. And Who I think, what was that? Oh, Ray's here. Lennox is here. All Things FPL is here. Thanks, Late Riser. Yeah, please do retweet it. To appreciate. Right, that's down to the bottom of the chat. Gabe, over to you. I'm going to put, do you want to start without your graphics, and I'll just put the graphics up later?
Yes. So I'll start with Newcastle, and then I just have two graphics for today. It'll be at the kind of at the end of the Newcastle bit.
Okay.
And then we'll just go from there.
Okay, cool.
So this is, I've been kind of, cool. Are we good?
Yeah, you're all right. Just me trying to be clever.
keep trying, man. keep trying, bud.
Nima's going to take over. No, look, I'm trying it again. It still doesn't work. Right, carry on.
Well, carry on. Here we go. So this is on Newcastle. This is from my preseason FPL matchups. Very much stat heavy, but I do try to weave it into a narrative, the descriptive narrative, based on my eye test and how I watch the games. So Newcastle, it's funny. I find they have some similarities to Burnley in that they acquired, like at the end of the season, they acquired some kind of personality to their play, right? All of a sudden, you know, Mariners famous for calling them Burnsalona. However, and then this is ironically, it happened even after another Marinerism here would be Trollum Wilson. When Trollum Wilson went down for the season, Newcastle just they continued to, you know, to show this really some kind of new brand of attacking play, spearheaded by Anasam Maxima and Joe Willock, right? Not to mention a newfound role for Joe Ellington, who was opening up wide and linking play from the right side. And you'll see most of Newcastle's attacks did come from that side. So they did have that slight preference for the right side, linking play with Joe Ellington. But their true attacking strength was in their counterattacks, right? Newcastle had the most chances created from counterattacks last season with 26. But they also had the lowest expected assists. So they had the lowest XA at 21.12. Which was interesting. Wolves is another team that had kind of a low XA, if we remember, but Wolves' low XA is because they dribble too much, whereas Newcastle's low XA is that many of their chances come from crosses. They had the seven most headed shots on goal, and only four teams had a better cross completion than Newcastle. So they were pretty good at whipping those crosses in. Their cross completion was 23.9%. To move on from the headed goals to the headed goals, goal attempts allowed. They had the third most headed goal attempts, actually, Newcastle did with 103. Another way to attack Newcastle was through crosses from the left, as Newcastle, they conceded the most crosses from their right-hand side. So if you're coming from the left, the 103 number was headed goal attempts conceded. That's that number. The previous, the 91, was the head goal attempts themselves. So crosses from the left to guys that can head the ball. I'm talking about, you know, players like Chilwell, like Dean. These players should do really well against Newcastle. Defensively, they have a couple similarities to Burnley, unfortunately for them. They had the positive is they had the second most blocks. They had 160 blocks last season. Burnley still had 180, so 20 more blocks than Newcastle. But they conceded the same amount of big chances as Burnley did. They conceded 73 big chances last season, which was their kind of Achilles heel. In fairness, that's still eight fewer chances than Liverpool conceded last season. So it's not too bad. It could be worse, I guess. Then lastly, I think it's important to know that Newcastle have a way of gifting goals to opposing attackers. They conceded 62 goals, but their expected goals on target conceded, so that's for every shot on target, what the XG of the shot was after the shot was taken, was 54.1. The expected was much less than what they conceded, so they gift goals. The other thing they have going against them is that the goalkeepers parried the joint second most saves to the opposition. They parried 28 saves to the opposition. So much so that they even found a way to assist Timo Werner Mariner.
All right, that's my point, right? That's my cue. Right?
That's your cue. How did that work out for a cue? Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, you've got it.
Yeah. Okay. So this one we see the ball bouncing. You know, who is that? Is that your boy Murphy there? Is that no? It's probably. I think that's Isaac Hayden. Bounce off Isaac.
Don't you have a go at Murphy? I'm gonna talk nicely about him later.
No, he just can't take a throw in. His boy can't take a throw in, but he doesn't get called for it, so it's okay. So the ball bounces off. I think this is Isaac Hayden here, and Werner's there waiting for it. Now we go to the next. Oops. And it falls to Werner. Werner, open goal. He still almost misses it. He swings through it. The ball kind of pops up and then just kind of trickles into the goal. But I thought it was pretty funny that even when the other team is assisting him, poor Werner. Poor Werner. We shouldn't be so mean to Werner. All right. What do you guys think about Newcastle? Any comments? Let's break it up a little bit. Any questions?
First things first, Callum Wilson. Trollum Wilson. I mean, look, he's a fast starter normally. In the last couple of seasons, he's started very well in FPL. And I have this insane bias against him.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, although I've just checked Twitter, that apparently he didn't play in the preseason game just gone, because apparently he's got a knock.
Shocking.
I hope that isn't the sign of things to come, because at this moment, he's in my drafts.
It's a precaution. It's just a precaution, apparently, but
yeah,
it doesn't fill you with confidence. I would say you probably don't want both him and Antonio. I reckon you can only really go for one of the two.
That's actually a very, very good point. That's actually an extremely good point. I mean, look, there's also talks about Joelinton in my in the chat as well. You know what happens, boys, when anyone mentions Joelinton in this show. My chair collapses every time. It just collapses. I mean, Fungal, for crying out loud, get Joe Linton out of your drafts, man. You're getting as bad as us.
he's not going to help you.
No, he's not. I mean, look, don't get me. This is the other phrase that I'm going to be. Everyone's going to. Going to haunt me all season. Too many moving parts. We're only 2 weeks away. There's still moving parts. What's happening with Willock? I've just seen that Bruce is still is determined to work on Willock to try and get him in. I'm not sure. I mean, Nima, you're in the Arsenal camp. What about Willock? Do you think he's going to go back there on loan, or is he going to become important for Arsenal?
No, I think he's going to go. It sounds like either Xhaka is like staying. He's actually staying, or they're just saying that to try and make the Roma team kind of make a big bid. But from the bid I heard, it's offensive at best. It's like 12 or 13 mil plus 2 million add-ons. Doesn't look like Xhaka's going. Like, you can't be ruthless. You got to be like a Chelsea and Liverpool if you want to get respect in the transfer market. So it doesn't look like we're selling him if that's the price. And I'm not sure this is a technique to delay it. And if Xhaka stays, then you've got Xhaka, Partey. You've got obviously Lokonga, who we just signed. You've still got Elneny there as well. So there's just so many options. And it looks like Willock's going. And that's like probably something that I don't know if it'll be permanent. Like, it might be like a loan with an obligation to buy 30 million. That would be quite nice while he's at this stock.
I don't care whether he goes there on loan or not, but if he goes there on loan, then I'm interested.
I know what you mean.
At a point in the season, I am definitely interested.
And if he doesn't, does that make Smith Rowe less appealing?
Yeah, there is that. Yeah,
yeah. So there is a ripple effect to that one. But yeah. it feels like it makes too much sense. I do expect it to get done.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Aston Villa?
So I was just in closing. I'm actually quite interested in Newcastle. Actually. I have no objection in having a Newcastle player in my draft.
I'm finding it hard to, and I know I shouldn't get Antonio and Callum Wilson, and I keep ending up with both of them in my team.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the Antonio one, I've been thinking about this. Is Antonio a move waiting to happen once your Europa League start? You know, once you start getting, because West Ham are in the Europa, I mean, we know he's injury prone, right? Thursday. Is he going to play Thursdays? Maybe not. But if he does,
he can't.
I mean, the only good thing about it is that if you do have to go with, if you did go with both of them, and you can get 3 weeks out of them with a bit of luck, there's perhaps Jimenez sat there with a little bit of, perhaps with a goal or two behind him and looking a bit sharper, perhaps another option as a replacement by the time.
Yeah, it's interesting. What's higher risk, right? A player like Tony that you might believe in, but isn't proven at this level, or a player like Antonio. Tony or Antonio, that is proven, but is injury prone as well.
Yeah, very interesting point. Right, cool. All right, let's move on, because I dare say the Tony. I'd like to have a chat at the end of the stream about the Tony question.
We can squeeze that in there real quick.
A 7.5 proven or a 6.5 Tony. Right, let's keep going.
Okay. We're going to Aston Villa now. Obviously, whoops, sorry, I dropped something. Dropped my pen. Place to start. Emiliano Goat Martinez is also hard to say. Had the most saves last season, 143 saves. The team also, he had 143 saves, and the team blocked the third most shots, which I found really impressive. And they blocked 159 shots, just one fewer than Everton. Not Everton, sorry, Newcastle. So these two things combined, they gave Aston Villa the best kind of overperformance in their expected goals conceded delta was minus 5.83, which shows, and that's an overperformance of, if you believe in Martinez and you believe in, I mean, that the blocked shots is going to continue. But I think, you know, they do have players that have the ability to do that, like on that back line. So that could continue. Then they should continue to, quote unquote, overperform the expected data. And Martinez had the second highest expected goals prevented at 3.7. Another little notch in his belt there. The one thing I found surprising is Martinez had the third most saves parried to opposition. He had 27 saves, even compared to the Newcastle goalkeepers that had 28. So there could actually be more clean sheets in store for Aston Villa if Martinez can work on his parrying skills. And also the Aston Villa had the joint second most red cards. They had 5 red cards last season, so they can cut down on that as well. Their defense could be much improved. On the attacking side of the ball, no team created more chances from the left side. Look at Target, that's why he's 5.0. Or had more crosses in the opponent's half from the left-hand side, which with 431 crosses from the left and 166 chances created from the left. Villa also had the second most chances from counterattacks. They had 24 chances from counterattacks. So, you know, obviously Grealish was integral to this, and as an outlet player, we'll see what happens if Grealish actually leaves. But if he does leave, I don't know if they have anybody that can fill the void. We'll see about that. The other thing is Aston Villa had the most attempts from set pieces last season, which isn't a surprise given the amount of times Grealish is fouled. So if they lose Grealish, they're losing that as well. Which is I find to be kind of like two major things that they rely on in their attack, in links from counterattacks with Grealish and set pieces, chances from set pieces. So Villa's attack should do well against teams who are vulnerable in the box. They had the fourth most shots in the box, 344 last season, and so far as of now, they've improved their attack with the addition of Buendia. What are you guys thinking with Villa?
I mean, Buendia has been in and out of my drafts. I can't decide whether to just stick Rafinha in and just leave him there, or whether I give it a go with Buendia. The problem I've got with Villa is that the fixtures turn quite sharply. After the first 3 game weeks look really good. I've had Target in my drafts because I'm not going to go with Martinez. So I was thinking of covering Martinez's clean inevitable 10-pointers with because I don't own him with... with Target, Yeah, I quite like. I could easily see myself starting with two.
Mm-hmm.
I could see myself starting with two, not three. I think I've cooled on the treble up. I did have the treble up in at one stage, but I think you're locking in just too many moves. Although you could be wildcarding, so but maybe not in game week three.
And I think that's another discussion, right? Is how if we're thinking of an early wild card, if we think that this is the time of season where we know the least about anything, right? Nothing has happened, so we have no data on this season, right? And we are going to learn as far as the delta, the expected knowledge delta, I guess, what we learn in the first few weeks of the season is the most that we'll ever learn at any other point in time in the season, which is the case for an early wild card, because you've gathered the most amount of information compared to what you had. So if you look at it that way, perhaps even like driving your team like into a wild card could be a way to go.
Yeah. Nima, anything you want to add on that before we move on?
No, I think just I agree on the kind of not having the free players, because especially now that we've seen like with United as well recently, they said like 9 people from the first team or the staff have got COVID and the kind of preseason friendly got cancelled. We might think we're kind of out of this area, but maybe I have a feeling that we might want to be careful a bit and not just assume that we don't need our benches and that this stuff's going to be okay to have 3 players from one team. Because let's say you have 3 players from one team and 2 from another and they play each other and that's the only game that's cancelled that week. Like you've only got 6 players left from your first 11. You're decimated.
No, it's a good point. And I think maybe we're all I'm trying to ignore COVID, but I can't.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, maybe we do have to, like I said, just put that extra playing member in into the squad and perhaps, you know, triple up at your peril possibly. But I think there'll be a few of us still looking at it. I think there'll still be a few gambles going on for sure.
It's hard to actually follow through. It's nice in theory.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Okay, we're on to Everton next, which I found very interesting. A quick shout out, obviously, to my friend at @FPL_tornado. Really great guy. Hasn't been super active on Twitter recently, but he's a lurker for sure. Really smart guy and very much tapped into Everton. So thank you to him for this information. Calvert-Lewin was fun. It was fun owning Calvert-Lewin at the beginning of last season. Unfortunately, I went for Richarlison back then instead. But I still got in on Calvert-Lewin quite early, and I captained Richarlison when he got 12 points. So that made it all worth it. I wrote, you know, watching him channer his inner people in Zaghi, scoring one-touch goals led to some highs for managers who owned him. But both he and the defenders led the team to the third most headed goals last season. And even, you know, when remembering back, I think most of these probably came at the beginning of the season. If they would have kept that going, I bet they would have had the most. But what happened, what was interesting, they had the third most headed goals with 14, but they only had the eighth most headed goal attempts with 89. So they're like middle of the pack there with their attempts, but they're highly efficient with their headers. Most of these headed goal attempts, unsurprisingly, came from crosses from Luca Digne on the left. They had Everton had the most crosses from the left last season, 377, compared to only 285 crosses from the right, and they created 107 chances from the left compared to a fourth worst 88 chances from the right. This really made them. I don't know if like just watching Villa, watching Everton. It was painful because they're so predictable. And when that one thing that they're trying to do doesn't work, then, I mean, they have nothing else. So it's just like an anti football game watching them, in my opinion. So, you know, hopefully they're making some changes. They've been linked with several players that indicate that they have an intention to add creativity on that right hand side. They looked at Dumfries, the Dutch right back phenom. That's already the love of the FPL community, and he's not even in the Premier League. Good, you know, kudos to him. And then in front of him, they're looking at Leon Bailey from Bayern Leverkusen and Chukwueze from Villarreal. My personal preference is Chukwueze because he has this kind of X factor, this kind of, I don't know, this dormant ability to be really, I think, something special. Whereas I think we know what Leon Bailey is, and he's a fine player as well. Let's see. So the other thing that I thought was interesting was that Everton, since they cross so much, they rely so much on crosses, they had the biggest drop in pass completion in the final third. Their drop was 5.4%. So maybe if they can also mix it up a little bit, if they get a creative kind of player to play at the 10, that could be interesting. I'd keep an eye, people are going to laugh, but keep an eye on Damari Gray's evolving role. FPL underscore Tornado tells me that they're liking what he's giving them, and he's proven to be quite versatile. Defensively, Everton have been a team of mistakes and recoveries. When I think of Everton matches, you know, having lasting memories of Pickford yelling at everybody, or that might just be the Euros, but I don't know. I always think of Pickford and he's yelling at everybody. But he maybe rightly so in many cases, because he had committed the fourth most errors that led to a chance. But they had the five most blocked shots. So they make mistakes and then they make up for it. You know, Pickford himself, obviously an inconsistent goalkeeper, at times a bit of a liability for the team. He had the fourth most parries to opposition with 23. But he's in good form after the Euros, and he could provide some value at 5 million. You know, if you don't want to spend, the premium for Dean, but then you do have some center backs that might have some attacking threat with headers. So maybe that 5 million is better. Maybe the better value is in the defender. And then just lastly on Everton, they conceded 134 chances from the center compared to 114 from the left and 119 from the right. So that central defense, in that central defense area, they do struggle. What FPL Tornado tells me is that they love Gabama, and Gabama has been injured. So if they can get Gabama to come in and play alongside Allen, then that could solidify that defense and there could be some real value there. And who knows, Doucouré, you know, may evolve into the Doucouré we saw at Watford.
That's one I'm interested in, that, because Doucouré at 5.5, you know, if he does start to show what we know he is capable of, and we have seen him before, then that could be really interesting. But I mean, Richarlison's still at the Olympics.
Yeah. Damari Gray will likely start on that left side. It'll likely be him. And he, in their last two games, I think he has a goal and an assist in preseason.
You see, that's interesting, isn't it? It's a bit of a gamble, but is that a gamble worth taking if he's lowly owned rather than a Tony who could be really highly owned, and if he bombs, he drops in price, whereas maybe someone like Gray won't?
Right, and you know, that's something, that's a comparison that we can make. You know, he's at 5'5", I believe Gray is. So, you know, you're looking at Smith Rowe versus Damari Gray, and you can look at those matchups as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. We'll have to just keep watching this space. Nima, anything on Everton?
Yeah, I'm just replying to some of the people in the chat. They were saying Calvert-Lewin apparently wasn't back yet in training, and I think I was saying it's this coming Monday, but actually I think it might be, like, that's not much time, right? Like, I don't know, what, they have one more friendly after that before the season starts or something. So I've got him in my current draft, Calvert-Lewin, so I'm not worried. I'll keep an eye out closer to the deadline. Obviously, with Richarlison away at the Olympics, like, you've got to think Calvert-Lewin starts. So the question is, will he be as effective without the kind of creative players behind him that are rumoured to not be starting the season? So that concerns me a bit, and I don't know if Rodriguez is still going to be there as another four, but I like the Doucouré shout, I'll say. So I'm going in with Calvert-Lewin, one of them. I've seen a few teams with Digne as well. I would consider that. I'm still considering it, but I've currently got Shaw, and I don't know if in my kind of structure I have space for 2 5.5. So I just need to think about that for now. But Digne is definitely the only other one I'd say outside Calvert-Lewin today that interests me. And then maybe Decore. I really like that idea because I remember that season he had.
Yeah, it's great, wasn't it?
It was a nice season.
He's a fun player. He's a fun player.
That's a make fantasy.
The way he glides forward into the box random.
Strides and he's penetrating lines.
Exactly. It's that whole fun I love, right?
Nobody can catch up for some reason.
I just want players that are like a Yaya Touré season. He wants to have a breakout year like that.
And there's a comment here from Gavinio. Avoid Decore, lads. Started with him last year as a punt at 5.5 and transferred him out. But this is the point we're making here. Things are changing at Everton. If Gubberman, is that how you say it?
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, wow.
Woo-hoo! Nicely done. There you go, Dad. If
I've been working on that all week. look, at the end of the day, if he comes back in, and that could change the dynamic in that midfield and allows him to get forward. And, you know, ultimately, that's what we're looking for. Calvert-Lewin last year, you know, look how he started last year. And look what everybody was saying. Oh, Calvert-Lewin, whoa, a lot of rubbish. Why are you picking Calvert-Lewin? He was in my team in game week one because of what had changed in the team over the summer. You know. So, yeah, cool. Next one.
I wouldn't think Calvert-Lewin would need much preseason or prep or anything like that. You know, I think he's a seasoned vet, I think, at this point. And after the Euros, even though he didn't play much, they're training and stuff. So,
correct. I mean, he spent most of his time in a swimming pool on a unicorn, probably.
They all did.
I'll admit, I might have done that today as well.
let's finish off with Leeds and then
moving on here. Leeds is, this was a fun one, and this will bring up some points that also we'll be addressing later. Obviously there's a lot of interest in Rafinha, and it is Rafinha. Rafinha and Harrison, and you know we're going to talk about a little comparison between the two later. We have some differing opinions here on board this evening. This morning, but you know, obviously the interest is well founded. As Leeds are a team that they love to play down the flanks. They had the fifth most chances from both the left and the right this season. Fifth most, the left they had 137 chances. The right they had 139 chances. So really not much between them from that perspective. But what skews it for me between the two is I mentioned, one, Rafinha is more integral to what Leeds does from a creativity perspective. You look at he drops deeper to link play. Players are looking for him as they're kind of penetrating lines and moving forward. And he's also on set pieces. So the set pieces is, you know, it's a mixed bag, but of course it's important, but it's a mixed bag. What doesn't bode well is that despite the number of corners, they had the second most, the number of crosses, they had the second most crosses last season, 786 crosses, and the third most headed shots, but they had the fifth lowest cross completion, 20.9%, and the second largest drop in pass completion in the final third at minus 4.8%. And then on top of all of that, like they're trying to get the ball onto somebody's head. There, they only had 8 headed goals last season, which makes me think they should have at least made a play for Giroud and not had let him go to Milan. But that's another story. The other thing I'll say for their defense, so there was a, I don't remember who always happens. FPL enthusiast asked this, and then a guy named Dave, I forget what his handle is, but FPL enthusiast. I don't think it was that Dave. I'm not that cool. I don't know that Dave yet.
Which Dave is that?
Aspilicueta.
Oh wow! Okay.
I don't know him.
I forgot to talk about the Scottish Dave from FPL Surgery.
Saturday.
I was so confused.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not a famous Dave.
it's just, you guys love bringing the English names to the Spanish players.
That's what they were doing. So they were asking, they were saying, is it, you know, Leeds' defense really, they transformed towards the end of last season, right? And they seem to be playing much better. And the question was, did that happen because of the two center backs? And my response was, I'm not really sure. And then I found that I thought it was a change of style of play. And when I looked into the stats, apparently Leeds' possession dropped significantly. Between game weeks 1 and game week 25, they had about a 60.2% possession. And then from game weeks 26 to 38, the possession dropped to about, 52.5%. So it was about an 8% drop in the final 13 games. And I think what happened is Bielsa just started playing a more balanced brand of game. And I think he's probably going to continue doing that. So I do expect Leeds to be much improved on the defensive front. Let's see. From a chance creation perspective, Leeds do make the most of their opportunities on goal. They had the third highest expected goals on target, 60.9, with an XG of just 56.35. So they add 4.54 XG when on target, which is quite nice. And then from a chance creation perspective, Leeds were always, they are an adventurous side. I don't think they'll be as adventurous as they started the season last season. I think they'll continue the way they ended the season. Because the lows of that adventurous side were often quite low. They had the third most unsuccessful passes, resulting in the most errors leading to a chance, 21. So to compound those errors, they gave up the fourth most penalty kicks. They gave up 9 penalty kicks, and the goalkeepers met both Melier and who was the backup that played for 3 games? I don't remember his name.
What, it leads?
Yeah.
Casilla?
Was it Kiko? Yeah, it was Kiko Casilla, right? Yeah, you're right. Kiko Casilla. They parried the most saves to the opposition. They parried 31 saves to the opposition last season, which is almost 1 a game. And we know, footballers know that saves parried to opposition often can lead to a goal. So they are best attacked through the middle and are vulnerable through the air. No team conceded more chances in the center of the pitch than Leeds. They conceded 174. Compared to 111 on the left and 137 on the right, but the chances didn't come from crosses, as they conceded the 6 fewest crosses from the left and the 3rd fewest from the right, which is really interesting. They came mostly from set pieces. Despite conceding the 5th most big chances, the same as Fulham, they also took away the most XG when defending shots on target. So they had an expected goals conceded of 58.71. but an impressively lower expected goals on target conceded of 51.2. So they took away -7.5 XG when on target, which is really impressive. They seem to be an evolving team who can still be hurt by clinical finishers operating in the middle of the field. So, you can tell who those are. Kane against Leeds. I think who do Leeds play in their first match?
United.
El Matador. I like El Matador in that first match against Leeds. That's it. That's the matchups.
Interesting. And one of the things which I've spotted in the home and away side of things for the fixture difficulty, which we'll touch on when we actually get into game week 1, but a little bit of a pre-warning here, is Leeds' defence away from home is far worse statistically than at home. Far worse. Probably one of the widest gaps out of all the teams.
I don't give that data doesn't still sway me in any direction.
It's interesting. Who knows? I mean,
is weird that I mean, it's a thing. It happened. It's there.
I mean, look, we're going to talk about Rafinha and Harrison coming on in a bit. Melier is a great conversation at 5 million. There's a Melier or Pickford. Melier for me. There was a comment in the chat earlier. The issue is, surely Ayling's going to get a bloody return this year. Surely he must do. He can't go all that season like he's done. I mean, he must be the most unlucky player ever, right? Even worse than Rafinha.
What if Bielsa doesn't want him to get forward? What if that's not what he sees in him, I don't know.
But his numbers suggest that he should have had something. And from that perspective, this is the thing. This is my dilemma. I quite like Ayling, but would I go Ayling and Melier? No. It'll be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
That's my dilemma there. We'll cover Leeds in a bit more detail, but because we've obviously got a couple of assets in the midfielder section. Nima?
Yes, I think I just want to second that point that I was kind of saying in the chat that the idea of getting Harrison or Bamford as my third Leeds player when their fixture swing happens, that's too appealing for me to kind of go for Meslier. But
it's interesting.
If I didn't have Ayling, then I would just go for Meslier, and I'd probably just think of him as a set and forget some people are calling him this year's Martinez. Totally agree with that. Like, that could be the case. He's a great option. But Ayling, I said I like to kind of pick some of my players for the fun of it. I say this every show, but you know, I saw his celebration when his offside goal happened, and I'd love to have him in my team and pop that gif on Twitter if he does the hair celebration again.
What are you waiting for? It's time.
Before we move on, can we get the likes to match the watching? I'm a Libra.
Is that a butterfly behind you?
Just got a 38 watching. We shouldn't really say
this.
Everyone will be thinking, oh God, these buggers only get 38 likes. I'm going to switch the pot off.
Switch it off. That's getting
the algorithm's going to be like, wow, they've gone from 100 likes an episode to 30.
You know what happened, Nima? I saw how Hibbo was roasted, and rightly so, for not having any flair.
Or anything.
Yeah. Any color, any, there was just
I blame Mariner with his entire, like, it looks like the whole Grimsby Town moved to Singapore.
Can you see Gareth Bale with a hat on as well in the background?
At the background, yeah.
So
the trouble is, guys, look, I mean, look, this is how bad it is. Look at all these bloody boxes everywhere. I've got boxes all over the bloody place.
What do you guys think about Firpo? They're saying, because he's 5 million, right? And I saw a Leeds fan saying earlier today that they'd rather kind of just go with Ayling. I guess he's the club captain and stuff, so I feel pretty nailed with him at 4.5.
I like Ayling at 4.5, but I just can't see me going.
And maybe if I wildcarded and Firpo was looking more attacking than Ayling, then maybe I'd consider moving at that
point. You can stick Ayling in at 4.5 now
and just hold him,
but you know, I don't know that I wouldn't go with a five with an asset higher than that. Certainly not potentially not a nailed one. So
definitely a wild card consideration, yes, for sure, because he does have upside.
Yeah, definitely. Right, let's keep moving. So yes, we're going to exercise our vocal cords, and you're going to get my new saying. Everyone's taking the piss out of me. Something chronic about this. So I'm just going to do it in advance. What are you waiting for? Are you craving more FPL content? Then look no further than allaboutfpl.com. Head over there for weekly articles from some of the top content creators on the planet. So what are you waiting for? Head over to allaboutfpl.com, the website for all your FPL needs.
I love that so much.
What are you waiting for? I've even started doing it on Twitter now. Right, let's crack on. So what we're going to do now, we're going to look at midfielders, but we're going to start with fixture difficulty. We're going to fly through it, the fixture difficulty, because we don't need to spend a lot of time because we've already done fixture difficulty to death this preseason. So I'm going to put everything up on the screen, but I'm not necessarily going to talk a great deal about it. So if you want to go back and just, you know, have a quick look, go back to the previous pods where it does explain it. So anyway, fixture difficulties, we know how ours works. This is how it works. We're taking a statistic approach towards fixture difficulties. We don't do three colors. We hate a three color fixture difficulty. It's not fit for purpose, just like the official FPL one. There we go, said it again. We look at matchups, attack against defense, defense against attack, using stats going as far back when there was fans in the ground. Now, that's an interesting debate to have as well. And I'm happy to have it, but not today. Hit me up on Twitter to discuss that, because I'll tell you what, fixture difficulties, every single fixture difficulty is going to struggle this year because there's a lot of changes compared to what has been going on in recent weeks and months and years. So, okay, so we're talking about pre-lockdown with fans, full season last year without fans, and championship data extrapolated against compared with Norwich and Watford when they were in the and when they weren't in the Premier League. And then we're talking about the last six games of last season when there were fans. XG we'll look at against expected goals conceded, big chances against big chances conceded, shots in the box and headers against shots in the box and headers conceded. And we rate them between 0 and 7. And it's basically when we talk about matchups, which you'll see in the matchup show in about 10 days' time or 11 days' time, something like that, you'll see how we rate the fixtures. You know, dark green is good, dark red is bad. So, okay. So this is the fixtures and for the start of the season. And I'm just showing the attack. So you're looking for good green, you're looking for the greens, okay? Remember, as I said. So what stands out? Well, Liverpool, City, United, and to a lesser extent, Leicester have got a sea of green. Villa have got positive matchups for the first three, but not as positive as you might think. 2019-20 is a long time ago, but they weren't that good. And remember, this is pulling data from there. So that explains that, in my opinion. And perhaps Grealish going might cement that. Let's see how that goes. Chelsea have great matchups in game week 1 and 4 and a quite favourable one against Villa, but fairly tough start otherwise. Everton similarly start well in game week 1 against Southampton, but then have harder matchups away at Leeds, if they can carry on the defensive form, that is Leeds, and Brighton, who we know are quite reasonable with respect to defence before they play Burnley. And West Ham also looked to have decent matchups in game week 1, 3 and 4, Newcastle, Palace and Southampton, and Newcastle have ratings of 1.1, 1.6, 1.8 against West Ham, Southampton, Leeds in game week 1, 3 and 5. So that is a really rapid run through there. You can tell I made some notes this week, can't you?
Flying through it, my friend, flying.
Flying through it. And here's the short list.
There's a question from Niels.
Hang on a second. Let me just do this. Let me just get through this shortlist. Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, Leicester, and the punts. And I put three in. West Ham, Newcastle, and Villa are my punts for attack. Now, there are plenty of caveats, as we've said. Fans in the ground. Could that have a even bigger effect on performance at home? Bear in mind, there are no away fans in the ground at all at the start of the season. So that's like almost like home advantage plus, perhaps. I don't know. But yeah, that's where we are. So that's the fixed difficulty. Gabe, sorry for just, I just wanted to just fly through that. What was the query?
Does the color take into account home versus away?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does, because the fixture difficulties are, if I showed you, and if you look back, it's from Niels, right? If he looks back, I think, to the fixture difficulty episode, he should see all the different levels for home, attack away. And again, what we'll be doing is we'll be updating this every single week when it comes to the matchup show. So you'll see this evolve. So we don't just have a fixture difficulty, it just stays as will evolve as we go. So you should see, say for example, you'll see Leeds pretty bad at defence at home on my pitch difficulty, as I said earlier. Any thoughts on the shortlist, Nima?
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, most people probably have like a West Ham or Villa player already, maybe two, and obviously there was talks of Wilson earlier. And in your kind of FDR, they actually come in as punts. So I found that quite interesting. And then Chelsea, who people are kind of saying they want to wait for till game week 7, they're in your shortlist. So it is kind of interesting how like the official FPL sites, FDR, doesn't really tell us much. And it does feel like that early release year in year, 5 years now in a row, means that they really don't care for us, like I said last show. So if you're listening, FPL, I call you out again. Please call me and I'll tell you how you can involve your community to make this game better and get those marketing numbers you need. But if you're listening somewhere, official FPL, please just do something with your game.
Nima's screaming into the void like Nietzsche. Okay.
Just one of you, respond to me.
This is the existential moment.
Yeah, as usual. So yeah, so there we go. That's the short list. And so Liverpool have positive 2.4, which is a delta between attack and defence on average over the first five game weeks. That is extremely strong indeed. That's all you need to know. So is Liverpool that triple up? You could argue possibly, from my perspective, is the one that I would consider. Okay. Very quickly, before we dive into the midfielders, hashtag ad, we have a collaboration with Fantasy Football Fix. We've been using the site, as you've seen in the one or two of our shows. So, and Nima uses it for his transfer trends for the Compass show. Well, he will do once it gets going. There's tons more content on there. We're not going to get into that debate like we did last week about this. What is it, Mr. Black?
Elite 11. Mr. Black's the anonymous one.
Yeah, Mr. Black, the anonymous Mr. Black. We're not going to go there, but there is loads of content there. So please, if you, if you want to support Net That Hole and you like the idea of Fix, then go to them. Please hit the link in the comments, and it will help us to keep the show running. Nothing more. We do not make money, because if we make more money, it goes to charity, like we've already said. FPL Robin Hoods. Okay. And as for artificial intelligence, I think we've got enough intelligence in here. Certainly in the chat. There's some real intelligence in the chat. Well, I think there is. Let's have a look. Who's there?
Well, there was.
But then, now I'll see it.
Exactly. We all know it. We were all thinking the same thing. That's awesome. Welcome, Elf.
Yeah, welcome, Elf. How are you doing, my friend?
Everybody gets roasted as soon as they get in here. We just light them up.
Well, to be fair, he has set himself up for a fall. He said he's this babe station.
That's right.
Fabulous. I love it. Right, let's keep going. So now we're
move off the ad slide, Bobby. Say hi to everyone.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. I did say hashtag ad, to be fair.
Yeah. No, it's
hashtag ad's over.
To be fair, I'm all rep with Fix, so I shouldn't be the one rushing the slide on.
That's true.
Right, so now we're going to go into midfielders. We're going to do it in three sections, okay? We're going to do 4.5 to 6.5. We're going to do 7 to 9, and we're going to do 9.5 and up, okay? And we're going to start, this is my bit, and we're going to do it slightly differently to the previous weeks, in the fact what we're going to do is we're going to actually bring, in this case, it was Hibo who did it last week, but we're going to bring Nima in at the end of each mini section. And of course, Gabe, you just jump in and out as you wish, as always. So let's look at price and value, okay? And we know there's lots of debates about value, but hear us out. Starting at the 4.5, there is nothing much to write home about. I think that's the first thing to say. We've got Mr. 2 Point now. So we had Binary Brewster. We've got Mr. 2 Point Brownhill this year. That's going to be my new one. I like him. So please don't think I'm slagging him off, because he's in my team. But Bissouma also sits there as well. 16.4, 17.1 PPM. Not tearing points per million, that is. Not tearing any trees up, but sitting there quite happily as a little bit of COVID cover for you. I like that. We've got Holberg at 5 million, 21.4, but quite frankly, my goodness me, how boring is that? It's like, it's the Connor Cody of midfield for me. Not for me at all. And the trouble is, once you strip his appearance points out, which this doesn't do, there's not a great deal of value there at all for him. He doesn't really get, he plays entirely in the middle third. Entirely, yeah, that's where he is. At 5.5, it gets a bit more interesting, but when we're talking about value, as I say, it's about time on the pitch. So even a repriced Dallas and renumbered Dallas comes out relatively favorably. I've left some of his bonus points in, all right, some, not all. Smith Rowe doesn't make the list for the season, but if you extrapolate him over the last six game weeks, then you'll see that he's interesting. But once we get to 6 million, then we start getting into the interest here. We've got Harrison, 26.7. We've got Suchek, 24.5 for potato salad lovers everywhere. if you don't get that trick, we used to have Suchek watch last year, which we got rid of because he stopped scoring. And they both top Rafinha, and of course, why? Because of the because Rafinha was in and out. He was late starting and then out the team towards the end of the season. So, you know, these are the caveats that you have to apply. He was on the pitch 31% of the time rather than Harrison 17% of the time. And, you know, when you talk about points per 90, Rafinha actually jumps above Harrison 5.1 over 5. At 6.5 over the season, we have Rafinha and James Ward-Prowse. Oh, God, what's going on there?
That's quite the sound effect. It's like cartoon.
I blame the chat. They said get on the red wine, so I just downed the gin.
I'm trying to. There's me trying to do things properly. There's you lot just bloody drinking.
Get control of your kids there, Dad.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to tell you off live on air for being late earlier. I forgot about that. Let me finish. At 6.5, we've got Rafinha and Ward-Prowse. Ward-Prowse at Southampton, firm avoid. Ward-Prowse somewhere else, might be interested. And also Traore from Villa. So, interesting. He seems to just pop up here and there. So, I've not really looked into his research, but he sits there anyway. So, okay, now moving on to the last six game weeks. So, from game week 33 to 38 inclusive, we've still got Mr. 2 Point Brownhill. As I said, I've told you about Holberg, Wasteland. Now, an emerging asset, Murphy from Newcastle, possibly. But there's been a bit of debate about on Twitter. He was fairly nailed towards the end of the season. He did have, and we'll come on to his stats, his numbers aren't terrible. So, like, apart from, like Gabe says, he can't take throw-ins, apparently. But apart from that, at 5 million, certainly a hell of a lot more interesting than Holberg, for me, unless Holberg decides to play for Denmark.
Murphy's 5.0?
Yeah.
Oh, you just killed it. You're going to pay 5.0 for a Newcastle defender?
We'll show you. He's playing at the back, but he's in midfield, isn't he? That's the risk.
He does get forward. He does.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I'll show you. You'll see the numbers in a minute. Westwood, 5.5. Good numbers, but, you know, he's on corners. But apparently, according to Gabe, just pre-show, Burnley don't score from him. That's what he told me anyway. So shoot him down. If they did, shoot him down in the chat right now, because I didn't check. And then we've got Smith Rowe there, and you can see Smith Rowe about halfway down. Look, 45% rotation, okay? And if you took that rotation, took it out, he is right up there. And that's the way I look at fixtures. At this value thing. I look at what might have been. And I think that's the key there, you know. I think that's quite interesting. He's got the number 10 shirt. Nima?
What does Nima think?
Is he gonna get a run this year?
So I was unmuting myself so I don't rudely interrupt you with slurps again. Sorry to the podcast listeners who can't see the live chat and the fact that I'm being spurred on to strip. But anyway, so on to some more safe for work matters at 12 o'clock on a Friday night, Saturday morning. Smith Rowe, so I love the idea of starting with him this season, I'll be honest. I haven't seen us sign a new kind of creative or attacking mid just yet. So if there was ever a time to be on him, I would just have him for that Brentford fixture. And you could probably bench him for the next two if you don't really like the City and Chelsea game. For me, I said this before on a previous show, if I do have Smith Rowe in game week one, I highly doubt personally I would bench him against either City or Chelsea. I'll just kind of play him. But that reason is because I don't know how long he'll be nailed. And as great as he was, he only really kind of has 22 or something Premier League games under his entire belt. So I don't buy this argument that just because he's wearing a number 10 shirt that he's going to be forever nailed. He was kind of a bit more mediocre towards the end of last season as well. And I do think we'll have another attacking mid to compete with him and rotate, whether that's Odegaard or Maddison or even maybe Awuro, however you pronounce his name too. But there's a few options, and
yeah.
I just kind of have ESR in game week one rather than have Buendia as a placeholder. Now, if Grealish leaves, then Buendia is a bit more exciting for me. On this list, though, just what I wanted to say quickly is Dallas is the one that I found a bit odd because obviously he's a midfielder. I know he's not here right now, but he's someone who people are shouting about in the background saying, you know, 5.5 and they would get Dallas. So I don't know what you think, because obviously you're talking about Murphy at 5 mil. I agree with Gabe. For me, it's kind of 4.5 or bust. Like, I don't know if I'd go for 5.5 to me is like my fourth mid. I would play them every week.
Yeah,
they wouldn't be like my fifth mid.
I think you've actually segued us perfectly into the power tables, because I was going to mention Willock 6 million, who knows. You know, I'm just on this slide, just finishing. And Harrison, of course, 27 points.
Just really quickly before we move on. So the rotation for Smith Rowe, Nima, is at 45. Right now it's at 45.4%. That's how much he was rotated last season. What would you put it
at? That was the last six.
So in the first six, like if we didn't sign an attacking mid, I would reckon he'd probably play at least kind of 80 to 90% of those minutes.
Yeah. Well,
and there's the value.
Which is why I would want to start with him now. If he drops off form, correct, or you know, we do bring in someone before the window closes, then I can get rid. But I wouldn't kind of like, I know people want to wait and see on him. I feel like this is a great time while the hype is there and he's got his shirt and he's just signed the contract. Watch him for a few more games of preseason. And I'd say personally for me, Pepe and Smith Rowe have been the two that when I watch the preseason games, they impress me the most.
I think that's why Mariner, he said, you know, right at the beginning of the section, that the first thing for is to consider is minutes played. You change that minutes played, you lower the rotation, and he shoots up the rankings here.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
To be fair, I called out Souček as being a GOAT last year preseason. And again, you'd look at where he was, extrapolating what he was doing at the end of the previous season, and then look what he does. I think that's a really important point. Just study this. You might even spot somebody who I haven't, you know, and look around those last six game week, that last six game week data, you know, the XGs and everything. You might find there might be just that little gold mine where you go, you know what, he could be the one. I personally think Smith Rowe is that man this season. He's the one who I think, certainly for the start of the season, I agree with Nima, I think that's the way, but you know, what Arsenal do going forwards, who knows. Okay, so moving on to this power, the power table, and this is where, and I think the first thing we'll do, let's go back to this Dallas conversation. Right, and there we go. And where is Dallas? He's right down here. 16th for XG, 24th for XA, 20th for XI, 21st for big chances, 20th for expected points per season. Dallas isn't in the same level when it comes to production now as in midfield. That's all I need to say. Nima, over to you. What do you say? And just to let you know, guys, for the graphics, and again, for those of you listening, what I have identified in, I've identified the players who are highest at their price ranges, okay, with respect to the power tables. So over to you, Nima.
So obviously I can see the ones you've highlighted, as you say. I'm not convinced necessarily the best ones at their price points. Rafinha is the one I'm starting with at 6.5, just to call him out. There's been a lot of debate about Rafinha versus Harrison or going for both. I know we're going to cover that in more detail later, so I won't kind of go into that just yet because there is a section for those two comparing them. I'm personally starting with Rafinha. I think if that 0.5 can really make a massive difference in your team, then perhaps you start with Harrison instead. I wouldn't go down that route personally because I kind of like the fact that Rafinha is on these set pieces. Also, just watching him, I feel like he's the kind of player that with the crowds back, he will kind of do even better and they will spur him on to just perform really well. And also, I feel like there were some moments where he could have had monster hauls last season and we just missed out. So I'm just going to carry on with that bandwagon with Rafinha personally. yeah, so that's me. I actually have Saar at 6 million as well in my team now alongside Rafinha. So I really like Saar. Nima, I know that he's obviously not here just to shout out because he doesn't have any last season's Premier League data. So if anyone's wondering why Saar isn't here, we're just trying to make
sure. I would also say that I think there was a couple of comments in the chat. So is it, what's his name from is it Brentford? Is it Mbueno? Or is it Mbueno? I don't bloody know. From Grimsby, I can't pronounce it. But I think there was a question
5.5.
About why isn't he there? That's exactly the same reason as well, because we haven't got the data for them in the Premier League.
Precisely that. So I think, like, it doesn't mean that they're bad shouts, but for me, the fact that Sol has previously played in the Premier League and for the same club, that's got a lot of appeal to me. And I think I kind of prefer that over, like, I think I was saying in the last couple of shows when we spoke to Tom Stevenson, I generally go into a season quite template and I only really have maybe 2 to 3 players that are uncertain or unknown quantities. So for me, I had Tony initially, but I didn't like the fact that I had both Tony and Sol. So I think I'm just going to stick with Sar for now. If Tony pops off, I can downgrade one of my free strikers straight to him and catch the price rise. And if he blanks against Arsenal and ends up dropping in price, then I'll swoop in cheaper later on. But yeah, I think for me, I really like kind of Sar, who's not on here. Obviously, I like Rafinha. Willock's, I think, a non-entity unless he does get that loan or the permanent move to Newcastle, as you were saying.
But Smith-Rowe, the interesting thing about Smith-Rowe, about Willock, I should say, this is a one-trick pony. Because, you know, he is just a goal scorer. Look at his assist potential, 23rd, big chances, 26, bonus points nowhere near. You know, that's an interesting perspective. He's only got one route. Now, looks to me like he's only got one route to get something, looking at that data.
At least the route is in goals and not assists. True. And he's on the, you know, more affordable side.
He is. And he sits up there quite nicely, doesn't he? He sits quite high in the table. I'm not saying he's a bad option, but this is how, again, if you're just looking at this data, if you're looking at it from the show, you know, look for the patterns of what people can do or what people are doing in comparison to others, because remember, this is rankings. So you'll see how, you know, for example, how certain players will do. And if you look at Murphy, guys, look at 5, he's 4th for XA in 90 and 2nd for big chances created in 90. Now, of course, his numbers are down because this has been elevated because he's not spent as much time on the pitch as others. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a narrower, a smaller data set. But, you know, there's something there possibly.
The other thing I will say is, you know, in terms of not spoon feeding, right? We talked about spoon feeding last episode, is go and choose the, you know, the data points that are important to you or more important to you. So for example, if, you know, or even combinations, right? You know, look at Rafinha, he's 1st for XA, 1st for big chances created, 2nd for goal involvement. Maybe that combination is going to be important. Where he's dropping is obviously in the points per 90, the last 6. Maybe you don't want to wait that. Maybe that's going to, you know, so just do definitely look at each one and do your own thinking about it as well.
100%. You can definitely leave that waiting out for the value and things like that, because if you've got that caveat, but it's better, you know, I'm throwing them in anyway. Nima, so back to you, man. Sorry.
Willock, I will say, I think the reason why we're so convinced he will definitely be leaving on loan or permanently to Newcastle is because he is much better, I think, off the ball than on the ball. And it sounds like obviously Arteta wants to build like a possession-based system and build out from the back and keep possession. And like Willock's best moments are kind of not actually touching the ball. Like, he's not the most technical player, and that's why I'm not convinced that he's going to work out with us. And it kind of backs what you're saying, because these goals, they're kind of Ramsey-esque. The difference is Ramsey was also a technically gifted player, not just someone who arrives late in the box to score. Willock, I hate to be offensive to the guy. I like him, but as in my point is what I'm about to say is not meant to be offensive in case someone thinks it is. He kind of reminds me a bit like a Welbeck or a Sonogo. Like, I feel like he does so well when he runs into the box because no one seems to know what he's going to do next, because it kind of just, he's that Bambi on ice. I don't know. Like, he just kind of shows up. He causes disruption. He pulls defenders. He finally runs in and takes a shot and scores. Like, it's fantastic, but let's be realistic. Like, I'm not sure that's the caliber of CM Arsenal need.
Yeah. Should we quickly cover the Rafinha and Harrison's side of things whilst
yeah,
we're here.
Yeah, that's good.
So
yeah,
look, here, right? I mean, let's just talk about, let's look. So we've got Rafinha and Harrison highlighted at the top of the screen. And of course, Rafinha only really drops down because of these points last six and the value because of what we've already explained. So, you know, we could actually recalculate that. You might find it goes up there. So let's have a quick look at this slide where we've just pulled some really key data. And I'll let you have a go at that. But thanks to Hibbo for his wonderful graphics. He does really well considering he's still in there. He's still got his hands tied behind his back in my cellar.
With no decorations.
With no decorations, because we still haven't got enough likes. We've got 49 people on now watching, which is actually really good for this time
it's
of day.
It's fantastic.
It's amazing. Thank you so much. But if you don't smash that like button, he's going to be on bread and water for the next week.
Be careful.
If you say it too much, you're going to end up turning some of those likes into dislikes, as I found out with my... I got a tweet after the show saying I prefer hashtag nice Nima to hashtag nasty Nima.
I'm really fair nice enough. Anyway. But no, come on, let's go for Rafinha. So Rafinha against Harrison, Nima.
So as we're kind of seeing here, like, pretty much Rafinha kind of outdoes Harrison in every metric. So I just took it out for the podcast listeners. His XG was 0.24 per 90 compared to 0.2 for Harrison. His XA was 0.34 to 0.24 to Harrison. His XG and XA combined was 0.58 versus 0.44 for Harrison. Key passes per 90 was 2.44 instead of 1.86. And then his big chances created was 0.5 per game versus Harrison's 0.35. You could argue these are very similar numbers. They're both actually pretty good numbers. And maybe that 0.5 million saving is worth it. However, for me, I just want to kind of add that, you know, Rafinha didn't actually start much of the early season. And he only really started to become a mainstay in the team and a starting 11 player almost like a quarter of the way into the into the season. So when he did join, what I noticed was he kind of was the first name on Bielsa's team sheet. And he was kind of generally the 90-minute man. With Harrison, I felt there was a lot of times where he might have got subbed around the 60th minute mark, 70th minute mark. If something wasn't working, they needed to try something else. So for me, I'd rather go for the minutes that are assured. I pay the extra 0.5 million. And I still firmly believe that when the fans come back, Rafinha is going to kind of step it up another notch from here. And I'm excited to see what he can do. I love watching him play. And there's nothing wrong with kind of either pick. But I would start the season with Rafinha and probably move to a Harrison attacking double up. Around, I think, I don't know when the game week fixture swing is, around game week 4 or 5 or something, but
6, 7.
Is it 6? It might be even later, yeah.
I think it's about 7, I think. I mean, Gabe and I had this little bit of a debate before the start of the show, didn't we, Gabe, about this? And, you know, my thought was, you know, my immediate suggestion was, as much as Nima spends most of our shows actually dissing official FPL and FPL towers. I actually thought maybe they'd priced Harrison and Rafinha about right. That was my initial perspective. Gabe, you've got a slightly different view.
Yeah, I think for me, Harrison isn't even in the conversation as far as either or with Rafinha. Maybe a double up around that game week 7, like you guys were talking about. But I think they should have been 1 million apart to really make it a conversation. Now I will say I think Rafinha is underpriced, most likely. He should probably be, you know, 7 would probably be, make it, give it a little more of a risk factor to it. Because in addition to all these stats, Rafinha is also on set pieces. He's on corners. He drops into midfield. The players are always looking to him, like we talked about, to link play, to create. Everything goes off of him. And he's not, like Nima said, he doesn't get substituted. He's not prone to tactical substitutions. Yeah. So these are like a lot of areas where Rafinha kind of overshadows Harrison. So I think there should have been 1 million between them.
So the moral of the story you're saying is don't try and save with 500,000 with Harrison. Go with Rafinha.
Go with Rafinha because he's underpriced, in my opinion, and that's where the value is.
Fair point. Okay. So, right, that's that done. So we're finished with those low-priced midfielders because we need to move on
to mid-range ones.
We need to, yeah, and it doesn't take me long to go through value for mid-range midfielders.
Fine.
Because according to my data, there isn't much because of the amount of rotation. So let's look at it. So moving up the price zones, you can immediately see a lack of value in comparison with the sixes and 6.5s, for example. It's due to, for example, things like rotation and obviously caveats. Harvey Barnes' injury. That's a great caveat because Harvey Barnes would, I'm sure, would look very, very nice had he not been injured. So looking at the price zones again, so 7 million, Zaha, 19.4 PPM, no excitement at all. Madison, wherever he'll be, and Barnes follow. At 7.5, you've got Gundogan, 20.9. He benefited, obviously, from that situation when KDB was out. But he's a rotation risk. I think he's now too expensive. Next, Mount, 19.6 at 7.5 million. I quite like Mason Mount. There's something about it. There's something there for me. It's an interesting option, but I'm willing to watch and wait on the basis of what I'm seeing there. Grealish, well, goodness only knows. Foden, 16.9 PPM. Look at the rotation. This is the problem. Look at all this red. This is why we, you know, if you get on them at the right time, perfect. But, you know, are we relying on Anna and Wee Rogue and everybody to try and second guess what Pep is going to do, right? It's very tough. Havertz, I'm interested. Gabe, are you still on him?
On and off. I'm on and off him.
Yeah. And Mahrez, and I mean, I did listen to, I was half asleep towards the end of the show on Tuesday night, but I'm pretty sure Tom made a point about Mahrez. What was it, Nima? Too expensive? Or not so much expensive, but too much risk.
Yeah, I think it's just especially with the news that Grealish to come is kind of imminent now. I'm not convinced. Some people want him for that fixture game week 2 versus Norwich to captain him. And I think when we spoke to Tom, he said that, you know, that's not for him. In one of his free drafts or so, he had KDB to start the season. So I think De Bruyne is who I would be going for. And I paid the extra for the captaincy shout because Morris probably does start game week 1. But what are you going to do when you then see him benched in game week 2 and 3?
Yeah, this is an interesting kind of set here, right? And price point, because it is very much like they all have incredibly high potential. It's very much like the sirens on the jagged rocks calling you into the rocks, and you're going to crash on one of them when they get benched, and they're all going to get rotated, and it's a real shame because we want to believe that the best things are going to happen. I guess like, oh, if I get this player, then it'll be a sneaky pick, but the perils are great.
But this is where we get, and this is where it comes into the next section, which is actually when we sort it by the last six. And there we see, look, Pepe now. That's another example of a potential emerging player in my. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, for goodness sake, he's been. It was bloody awful for, as far as I'm concerned, for long periods of the season. But towards the end of the season, he was averaging 7.3 points per 90, and you extrapolate him out to 278 points. I nearly fell off my chair. We know he's not going to do that. But, you know, at 7.5 now, Pepe, I think's in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Pepe now is in the conversation. Torres, look at Torres. You know, he would have extrapolated out to a 250-point player had he been on the pitch for all that time. But, you know, for a full season. Of course, they're going to rotate, so it's all relative, right? But, you know, 6.6 points per 90. You know. These are the type of emerging players which I mean, Lingard looks, he's dropped. But, you know, at the end of the day, he had last six. If he'd have done it last 12, you might have had something different. You'd have seen something different there. Greenwood as well. There's a number of players in there that I think there's a possibility to unearth that gem if they get a run.
If KDB doesn't start the season, Gundogan is an interesting option.
Yeah. But I think if he starts, I think it's not for me. Not for me. So before, shall I move over to the powers again, and then we can have a proper debate, because I think it's worth talking about. So here's the power tables, and Foden comes out top actually with respect to data for 90. And even with the fact that he's 10th with respect to value. So if we look through the the price points, 7 million, we haven't really got one. So I'm going to plump for a fit again, Harvey Barnes. 7.5 for me, Jota or Greenwood. Okay, caveats, and this is where I want to bring the discussion in. Firmino, Rashford, Sancho, all these caveats, all throwing around for those two players. Foden, if you can work out Pep Roulette, good luck. And Havertz are the players which stand out in their relative price points. So from 7 up to 8.5. Nima, over to you, mate.
I know you love me kind of picking these players. So I think I really like Pepe. I'm seeing a lot of stuff in the chat about him. Obviously, he's quite high up in the overall ranking. I do think he's a wait and see. I would not start the season with him at 7.5. I'd much rather go Smith Rowe at 5.5. Feels less risky. However, at that 7.5 price point, if I'm being honest, like, it sounds like Greenwood should be relatively safe with the Rashford surgery now and keeping him out for like 12 weeks. So I am really tempted by Greenwood at the moment, and he's someone who I've got my eye on. Jota, even though he's quite high up, unless Firmino is kind of coming back quite late, and I don't know if he's at the Olympics, or is it just a Coppa that he played?
I don't think he's... I mean, again, perhaps someone can correct me, but I don't think he's back yet. And that...
Exactly, and that makes me think, okay, maybe Jota's safe for a while, and I do think Jota's maybe the long-term successor to play the Firmino role in that kind of Liverpool team. Maybe later in the season. I think Tom from Who Got the Assist, he kind of said, is triple Liverpool a foregone conclusion earlier? So most of us probably have Salah and Trent already. And I know a lot of people have gone for Robertson. Not as many have gone for Jota. And I'm leaning towards kind of that if I knew or I had an inkling that Jota would start game week one, I'm actually a little bit tempted to go with Jota instead of Robbo. I generally prefer to go for the attacking assets. So Jota is very interesting to me. Foden, I'm not touching with a barge pole, no matter what any metric says. I just can't go near. Lingard, I wouldn't even think thrice. Gundogan, we had fun, but not again. So Torres is the only kind of City midfielder that beyond De Bruyne is kind of exciting me a little bit right now, because I feel like if he's kind of potentially going to play that number nine role, and Pep has talked about him doing that in the past, that's an insane value there at 7 million. So I know you said Harvey Barnes. My 7 mil pick in the power rankings would be Torres. But yeah, generally, I'd say the other option is I really like Mason Mount from like maybe game week 7 onwards. He had one of the highest kind of creativity stats in XA and big chances created outside of, say, De Bruyne, Bruno and Grealish last season. So I think he's definitely going under the radar at that price point. I think the thing with Mount that's a bit of a shame is he's so good when he plays further forward, but Chelsea are so stacked that you almost will always see him in more of a like CM role. And I don't know about that. So Havertz is quite appealing, but Gabe kind of almost speeched me into starting with Havertz, and I put him in a draft and I had a little look and I thought it really ruined my balance having that extra kind of expensive midfielder. So he's an easy wait for me. I know there's a few other options here, by the way. There's some interesting ones. So there's people like kind of Zaha. We were all kind of saying we didn't even know if Vieira would still be around by Christmas. And now we're kind of getting nervous with each signing that comes that maybe we're going to be made to eat our hats on that kind of comment we made a few pods ago.
The thing is, though, is that, you know, if you, we've already had that. I mean, I think Hibbo's been quoted that he doesn't think he'll own a Palace player all season.
Yeah, ever.
Ever. In fact, he said ever.
Ever. I think he was trying to run away from those comments now after Palace signed Conor Gallagher today.
I mean, for me, I think it's a straightforward shootout for that 7.5 million slot between Jota and Greenwood, and that's going to go down to the wire for me, I think. That could be the last decision I have to make with my team.
I think those two are I've seen a couple teams with both in them, and I'm not convinced I'd go with both, but definitely take one or the other. The other thing I've noticed is someone in the chat, so Nehal, he said that actually in the friendlies is not, well, Jota's not back, I assume, but he's saying that's kind of the false nine. Actually, someone else told me this too. Oxlade-Chamberlain, for whatever reason or another, is being trained to be the false nine backup for Firmino. So he's saying also Minamino and Origi, but someone else has also told me Ox. So I've heard Ox from multiple Liverpool fans as like he is the backup to Firmino. So I'm not quite sure why that is, but yeah, like I would have thought it would be Jota, but
that would be a shocking decision.
Very strange, right?
I hope, if Liverpool fans are saying this, they should have tears in their eyes.
Oh, no, he wasn't happy. My Liverpool friend was like, I don't know why, but Ox is training as our false nine backup. He was not impressed about it, but...
No.
I mean, look, for me, I just look at Jota and I see he's top ranked for XG90, top ranked for big chances, top ranked for shots in the box. You know, you've got Greenwood, second for shots in the box. Fourth for XG. So I think Jota, to me, he just has, I think it's just that worry about rotation with Jota, and I think maybe Greenwood with the I might be wrong, but maybe Greenwood with the Rashford side of things might be a little bit more appealing. I don't know.
I think what I will say actually is that Jota's numbers, like when you look at them just as a straight comparison, like we maybe did with Rafinha and Harrison, and perhaps we should have done this with these two, is he is way like head and shoulders above Greenwood's numbers. Like yeah. Jota's numbers are explosive. Like the guy can score a brace in a 30-minute cameo anytime. As could Greenwood, I'm sure. But the underlying numbers, just from a purely statistical point of view, I would be going Jota every single time if I was assured of his nailedness.
Okay.
So, I mean, the one thing I will say about, just to go back to Havertz, give Havertz a little love to, because, you know, Jota is a point starter. But it is true. Havertz, Chelsea created the fourth most chances from the center of the field. And if Havertz could be nailed at that nine for the entire season, you know, the team with the fifth highest expected goals from last season that creates the fourth most chances from the center, I think could provide real value. And I don't think he would be as fixture dependent as maybe some other players, just because of the way Chelsea play and their style of play. So I think he's still very much a consideration for me. But like you were saying, Nima, it would mean, you know, it might be good if, you know, if right now I have Antonio and Callum Wilson, you know, I could drop Callum Wilson to Tony. And, you know, we talked about that earlier on in the show. But it would change the structure a little bit because I would have to take money from defense.
Yeah, I personally like to have a player in that mid-priced sort of midfield zone for flexibility of the team. And again, you know, go back to the show where we did the structure. I forget which one it was. I think it might have been the second or maybe the third show we did, where we did the structure, where we ran through all the different types of structures there. And, you know, I just see a lot of teams, and I asked for a few drafts this week on Twitter, and I saw a lot of teams which look like mine. There's a giant hole in that mid-priced midfield sort of area. And I think this might sum it up, or should we say this slide, I'll move back to it. This slide might sum it up because nobody can quite work out what's going on with respect to, you know, who's gonna play. So are we just falling back on the 6.5 million safety net of a nailed, like we say, of a nailed Rafinha and perhaps a little bit of a punt in Buendia? But
I don't mind kind of starting with Buendia, especially if Grealish goes, and then like I know maybe by game week four, when those kind of Villa fixtures turn a bit more like sour, you could have a plan and move on to another asset in this range, which by then maybe we'll know which one is the least rotated or best player. Yeah. There's just so much uncertainty at this price point. I think we're kind of seeing teams where you've got the double premium mid with Salah and Bruno, you've got the Rafinha, the 6.5, and then it's like, where do you go from there? Like, there's more money in the back than there has been in previous years of FPL. There's loads of great 7.5. So most people have three strikers at least. There's a couple of those with Keenan Davis, but I'm not seeing too many of them.
I'm getting a bit COVID aware again regarding this, and I'm thinking a 4.5 forward. I'm cooling rapidly on that on the basis of what's going on, possibly. But yeah, I mean, there's comments, you know, people have been drawn to the premiums, which creates the hole in that mid-price gap. Absolutely. That's exactly what we said the other week. And the other thing, of course, and we've all got to have our wild cards in our back pocket at the start.
Yeah.
You know, this is a prime area, I think, it's almost a watch and wait area in some senses. I don't think it's bad to go without these players, actually. I don't think it's bad at all. I do think, though, that personally, I think I might well go for I may look at a 7.5 option, and it would be one of Jota or Greenwood. Okay, that's that section. So now let's go on to the final section. There aren't many players here, so it shouldn't take us quite so long. And that's the premium midfielders sorted by value. And right at the top, Tom. You know, 6.6 points per 90, 8.7 rotated, blows Rashford right out of the water at 18.3 at the same sort of value. And then if you look at Bruno, 11 upwards, you've got Bruno at 20.3, 7.1 points per 90, 9.2% rotated. Salah, 18.5. My notes are wrong. 18.5 points per million, 8 points per 90, and 10% rotated. Mane, a disappointing 14.7. KDB, clobbered with injuries. Sterling, I'm not even going to go there. He had a pretty poor season, of course, as we all know. If we quickly move to the last six, we now have, again, 9.5 to 10 million. Son still top, 19.2, 5.8 points per 90, 19% rotated. Still completely obliterating a possibly injured Rashford. 11, 12, 12.5. Salah now top, 6.8 per 90, 8% rotated. Mane now second. Mane jumps up in the last six. Favourable fixtures, right, as well? Fixtures were very good. I remember, I'm sure I called out that they would win a game 5-0 at some stage. towards the end of the season. 23% rotated, there's the risk. And Bruno, with an off-form Bruno, really off-form, 11.3 ppm, 4.3 points per 90, 18% rotated. KDB and Sterling being rested. So, yeah, so that's the price side of things. So with respect to value, and again, you can't compare these numbers with the previous, with value at other levels. You really can't. Right. So I think the first thing which stands out to me value-wise, the value pick at this level is, for me, 100% Son. That's where I am with that. But the trouble is, am I going to go without somebody like Bruno to fit Son into my team? And I think that's the debate to have. So with that in mind, let's move on to the power ratings. And there we see. So again, if you look at the power ratings, 10 million, obviously Son sits there. But Salah, the order, you know, basically everybody else, we've got Salah top, then Fernandes, then KDB, and then Mane in that order. So Nima, do you want to come in on this?
Yeah, no, of course. We're just talking about it in the chat as well. I think it seems like every draft we're seeing today has Salah and Fernandes. So it's not kind of surprising to see them both at the top of your power rankings. Someone else said they also have De Bruyne, so they've gone triple kind of midfield premium. Wow. I do like De Bruyne as a shout. I have a feeling you can't kind of have Trent with that, and you probably got to have a 4.5 forward and maybe even a 4.5 mid on top of that. So there's definitely
playing,
a lack of
balance. Who's having to play is your 11th man.
Yeah, this is a, so like this is like me last season. I think many of us, including me, had free premiums most of the season, and my 11th man always suffered for it. It was always someone pretty trash who got me like 1 point, if that. You're very reliant on the premiums.
On Tuesday, Tom spoke about, you know, we do all have this urge to bring in as many premiums as we can. But if we can build value for the first couple of months, then we can afford those three premiums on the early side of the season. And then that will propel us. We just have to be a little bit patient.
That is a very good point, because you could kind of, your team value could be 2 million higher than someone else's if you do have those Rafinhas and the other assets who we think are underpriced now, and you rise that 1 million with them.
I was just going to say there's a couple of comments here. Non-penalty XG for Bruno is probably worth considering. It falls off a cliff without those 10 penalties.
Mm.
I think that's from Tom, I think. So from that side of things, it's an
interesting. What do you guys think about Kane? And like, obviously, if he leaves, does that make Son less appealing, or does it actually make him more appealing?
That's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because you're almost giving with one hand and taketh away with the other.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're giving him penalties and you're taking away his service, potentially. Because Kane's service to Son, certainly at certain
times, it accounted for a lot of the goals last season.
Absolutely.
Right? It was like a Kane pass from the halfway line on a counter-attack and Son scoring from outside the box versus Arsenal, City, whoever he played, just fuck the XG, 0.01. It's a goal, yay!
just when I didn't own him. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And when we all sold them for the bad fixtures, yeah.
I remember my analysis of those games, and I was like, there's no way Hasenhüttl was going to play a high line. That would just be completely asinine. Oh, wait, he did it.
You were furious, weren't you?
I'm still furious so a little bit. Pissed off.
But no, that's my view. I still quite... I mean, look, we've already said, are we sleeping on Son's fixtures game week 2, 3, and 4?
I love Son as a player. I think I said this a few shows ago, like over the last 5 seasons in the Prem, he's consistently shown that like he's an elite goal scorer. Like this guy will score. Mm. His problem in the past has been where he's maybe been asked to hug the touchline and like maybe play a very far wing role, like a kind of... what you used to see from Sane at City under Pep on occasion, where he'd just literally be on the corner flag.
I need to interrupt you because your dad's just spotted something.
What have you seen?
Say, touch the hug line.
Yeah, he's not going to let you get away with that.
Touch the hug line. You caught me. You heard me.
Nima tried to keep talking. He's like, maybe if I keep talking long enough, he'll forget about it.
Now you've got to do a forfeit. Come on.
The wine is finished now. You need to let me go off camera to bring more drinks.
Go on. Clear off.
I'll do that. I'll be back soon. But I still stand by what I said. We're on a... I don't know how many likes we're on now, but when we get to the... How many? Let me check before I go. We're on 44. We have a dislike. I think that might have been when I unzipped my jacket, but... It's still better than the last show where there was maybe 2 dislikes.
that was the people that came for a fishing show.
Oh dear. So I think, does people generally agree with the order that I've got that in? Salah, Fernandes, KDB, Mane, Son, obviously Sterling and Rashford aren't really in the story at the moment. I mean, not to say Sterling might not come back into the story this year on the back of his exceptional Euros. He certainly brought some form. He could come out of that a different person potentially with respect to his, you know, confidence at least.
I think that the non-penalty XG point is a good one. that Tom made, and then you have to wonder if maybe, you know, Sancho as a chance creator. You know, he progresses the ball down the field. Could he create the chances that you need to cover Fernandes with that big savings? I think that it's a consideration when you take into account the non-penalty XG.
I think the issue is captaincy, right? what you've got to think about is who are you going to captain? Now, mm-hmm. if you are, and this is the one thing that is really making me think about Bruno, because if I'm paying 12 million for a player, I'm going to want to captain him. And I'm looking at it and I'm just looking Salah, perhaps. And then game week three, I've got a problem. So at game week three at this moment, I could be on the carpenter. Maybe if I moved away from Callum Wilson, perhaps Iheanacho. But I'm struggling with game week three with respect to captaincy at this moment in time. That's my feel. So, but I mean, I know Bruno possibly could come in for captain instead of Salah. I'm not looking at the fixtures right now, but I think there's a possibility he can come in once, twice, but not much. I think Salah is a fairly solid captain shout as it stands for a number of the early game weeks. So maybe you could go without him. What's your view?
Yeah, I think you mean go without Bruno?
No one's good. I mean, someone asked me, what's the rule for this year? What's your number one rule for this year, Chris, for FPL? I said, pick Mo Salah.
Pick Mo Salah.
That was it. So, I mean, but Bruno, how many people? I mean, let's have a little poll. We've got 43 people on now. Bruno, Brun, yes, or Brun, no?
We can do a quick one there, but I think looking at all of the FDRs that we've been discussing over the past few weeks, you know, the De Bruyne is also on penalties, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a strong case to go De Bruyne over Bruno, and City has, I think City tops your attack FDR for the first six, maybe. Yeah. You do, right?
Yeah. So we've got a few. So we've got Niels, yes. That's what's happening. Mohammed, yes. Another Neil, yes. So we've got Neil and Niels both going, yes. Andy, no. Grady, no. Bungles on, yes. Gavinho, yes. All things FPL, yes. Romantham, no. Nehel, yes. More yeses than noes.
It's quite divided, though.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And Tom, yes, but it will be frightening.
It'll all end in tears, as you say.
Yeah, as always, yeah. It's nothing new there, is it? 911 pop star, yes. Bruno, yes. So, nope. We've got another one. We haven't got Brew yeses and Brew noes. We've now just got nopes. Nope. Hello, Nimi, you're back.
I had to give Hibbo some rations.
I didn't agree with that.
Oh damn! So I heard you had to let him do 100 shows first, and once he's done 100 live streams, then he's allowed to eat.
Oh my goodness. Right, so that's unless we've got anything else to add. I mean, Nima, I booted you off air when it was your section just so you could get a drink.
Oh, that's true.
Do you have anything to add? I mean, you maybe missed, I don't know if you heard what we were talking about, whether you were still listening as you were doing what you were doing.
No, but I did get tweeted the three-man midfield while I was out, the Salah, Fernandes, De Bruyne. I do like that. I also feel like that could be quite an interesting way to get ahead if no one else can kind of get to De Bruyne in game week two against Norwich. So I would say kind of take a punt. I like to only have, as I said, 2 to 3 punts in my team. If I had De Bruyne, I'd be pretty damn sure the rest of my team was template. So I don't know. I'll have a look at your screenshot later and see what the rest of your squad looks like.
Okay. Right. All right. So, right. What we're going to do is, this is a fixture. This is just the last slide, which we're actually going to do. I think, Gabe, you actually designed this slide.
I put it together really quickly.
I'm going to go up on the screen and I'm going to let you explain it.
Okay.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay. We've been looking a lot at...
There we go.
Pardon me. We've been looking a lot at value and, you know, and the uncertainty of the mid-price midfielders. And so I wanted to compare them with, rather than compare them with midfielders themselves, compare them with premium defenders. And every time I do the comparison, it shows here is from a value perspective, the defenders offer considerably more value. So we look at the best value just from the season PPMR. Do you want to explain PPMR real quick?
Points per minute with rotation. So it's
points already... per million with rotation factored in. So we have kind of at the high end for defenders, for the podcast listeners, we have Cresswell at 27.8 points per million with rotation. We have Target at 27.6, Wan-Bissaka 26.2, Dunk at 25.8. So that's the kind of value we're looking at the top end. On the bottom end, you're looking at, I'm just going to skip Nelson Semedo. Let's go with Trent Alexander-Arnold at 21.3 and Veltman at 21.3 as well. Now, if we go over to the midfielders, we have, let's see, who's top there? That's our friend Jack Harrison at 26.7. So if we look at the top midfielder, 26.7 equals about the kind of towards the top, maybe the third for defenders. But then it drops quite sharply here, where we go down to Højbjerg, and no one's really considering Højbjerg. Let's go to Bowen, because some people are considering Bowen at 6.5. He's at the PPMR at 21.7. Now, 21.7 would be third worst for value defenders, actually below Nelson Semedo. So
yeah, about 20th.
20th for...
Maybe not quite that low, but not far off. I'm just quickly trying to count it.
So the sixth best kind of PPMR midfielder would equal the 20th best PPMR defender. And I think this really makes the case for the big at the back, because a lot of these defenders, they have less uncertainty, they have better value. I think those are the two main reasons. What do you guys think?
Well, I think it's a very, very good comparison. I wish I'd actually done it. I wish I'd thought about it myself, quite frankly, but no. It's good that you're actually channeling your inner Mariner.
Yes, sir. Yes. Diving into the numbers. Oh, Captain, my Captain, just don't kick me out and don't lock me up.
Each of us follow Dar's example in different ways. You follow him on the algorithm, the machine, the data.
What?
Hibbo and I follow him on the drinking.
I was going to say, that's what you were going to say.
Yes. It's not my fault. I only started drinking red wine when you kept messaging us every week about it.
That's right.
I've got a lovely glass of red going. So anyway, so that's that on the midfielders and everything. I mean, look, I think that's. I think I'd like to think, I hope people have enjoyed it. Please do give us some feedback about it, either in Twitter. I'll put the power tables up on Twitter today to get the debate going in there as well. We're happy to take a few questions. Have you seen many of them, guys? Because to be honest, I've been concentrating on the show a lot.
We've been answering them as we go. There's a comment if this graphic here is it indicating that we should play a 4-3-3.
The problem I've got with this is that I still have this feeling about goals. I see goals in the, you know, so I think if you're going to do it, you've got to make sure, you've got to pick a defender for me with the option of getting an attacking return as well. You know, by all means, play 4-4-3-3, but pick defenders who are going to get over the halfway line, unlike Connor Cody. Maybe unlike Fofana, another one. I'm not saying bad picks, but you know, this is pointing, as far as I'm concerned, this points me to Cresswell on corners, as we've said, Target from the point of view of crosses, Dunk from his headers, from his perspective, you know, the chances, and he's on free kicks, right? Koufal, we don't need to talk about him. He could have an absolutely monster season potentially. Yeah, and just looking down, there's plenty of players there. Chilwell, you know, Chilwell could come into the. And I just look at this and look at the mid-price midfielders, and you know, I know we spent a lot of time talking about it, but you know, I quite like Harrison, but I think Rafinha, I think's the right call. Smith Rowe, I like that shout. But look around there, apart from that.
I mean, but when you're making the comparison, you know, you look at Smith Rowe versus Shaw, or Smith Rowe versus Dean, or Harrison versus Chilwell. At every comparison I make at that same price point, I want to go the defender. I prefer the defender pretty much every single time.
No, I think the issue is age. You're probably talking yourself into having owning Mr. 2 Point then. Mr. Brownhill.
Mr. Brownhill.
I think, you know, I don't normally own 4.5 midfielders, but they're going to play a part this season. Okay. I think they're definitely going to play a part this season. If nothing else, just to sit there and just come on and just hoover up a couple of points if we go on the wrong side of something. Mm-hmm. Guys, I want to just bring in one quick chat before we go. We've got 5 minutes to cover it. Let's cover it in 5 minutes. Let's have the discussion about Kieran, about Tony. Mm-hmm. And also about the comparing him against the 7.5 million assets. There's been a lot of debate about this week. My pick, or my view, and I think this came from Thomas, I think Tom at Nima, if I correct me right, did Tom go this way? Is that Tony at 6.5, where do you go if he doesn't, if it doesn't work, if he doesn't kick on?
I see
a little bit of a hole there. I don't see there's a lot of options where I'm more comfortable perhaps starting with a 7.5 and dropping to him very quickly if he kicks on. That's my perspective.
Yeah, so I had Tony in my draft. He hadn't gone anywhere. And then we had that chat with Tom Stevenson. And since then, I've actually converted him up to Antonio. I've spent the extra 1 million because my view is that I can kind of downgrade any of Antonio, Calvert-Lewin, or Watkins, who I have, into a Tony if needed, and free up those funds to upgrade somewhere else in my midfield if there's another exciting mid-priced midfielder that shows up that I don't know about now. I don't see anything wrong with going with Tony. I'd say he's a calculated punt solely because, obviously, his ownership numbers, I'm a template player. If he pops, like, it's like 40% ownership almost already, right? I think he's the most owned forward. So it's a little bit scary to go without him, but equally that first game doesn't appeal to me. I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm delusional. I'd rather buy Tierney and play him and back the clean sheet and then go on Twitter and laugh at all of y'all in the community with Tony, bitches. But anyway,
that's my 2 cents. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to be hiding behind the sofa in game week one about a player who's come up from the Championship.
No, I wouldn't be hiding from that. I'd be downgrading to him if he pops.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to miss much, are you, at the end of the day? I think it's just it's one of those ones, I think, where you're better off being able to move on to him than being left in just this wasteland of, there may be an option because there might be, there might be the Everton there, like you mentioned, Gray, didn't you?
He's looking quite good in preseason, they're saying, aren't they, Gabe?
Yeah, Tamari Gray. Yeah. He could be a 5-5 option. Bungle says, take off the Gunnar goggles, Nima.
No, I like Josh King. So he was actually in one of my drafts at 5.5 for a while. But then I was kind of a bit like, they have a lot of forwards, this Watford team. And I've got Shah, as you say. I was going to say Saar, but I'm trying to copy Gabe now. So Shah.
Is it Shah?
Ishmael Shah.
Nihal has a question.
Right.
Well, Tony is a talisman. Andy Martin is saying that. Like, it is true. That's why we all want. That's why it's a calculated punt, because normally I wouldn't be up for promoted players, but he's cheap. That's not a bad. It's not like he's your premium player or your captain. Like, if he goes wrong, you can move on. And maybe not easily, but you can move on.
If he goes wrong, though, Tom did make a good point that so many people own him. If he blanks against Arsenal, you can see people just selling him any drops in price.
Because people get there's a hell of a lot of very impatient people in FPL, right?
Yeah.
Especially the first 2 months before they all quit.
Yeah.
Because they're going to quit after that. Each international break, we find a few million players quit.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great point that you made, Nima, in the Compass show, that after the first international break before the first international break, that price fluctuations are quite severe. They're extreme, and you want to get on the right side of them.
No, totally. There's a couple of other questions. How do defenders compare to forwards, lads? How, you know, let's see that next week.
Because I guess we compared defenders to mids, haven't we, this week? Yeah.
Yeah. So let's look at that next week. And
what about Pukki being fixture sensitive? They're saying obviously last season he had pretty tough fixtures in the first six, and he had great returns in those, didn't he?
I wouldn't be at all. You know me on Liverpool defence. I'm not at all certain that they're going to keep a clean sheet until they get themselves sorted out. Wouldn't be at all surprised if they didn't score in game week one.
Yeah, I would still rather go Tony with his current ownership and downgrade to Pukki, because I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was FPL Salah Abdul. He actually said that around game week four, if Tony goes wrong, you can quite quickly just move on to Pukki where his fixtures turn nice.
Yeah.
So there is that option there.
There's a question from Nihal. I'll just move the screen. So it's a question from Nihal. Home and away clean sheet record will change as soon as fans are allowed. Would we still go heavy at the back then, Gabe?
I mean, that's what we were saying, that it does, you know, we do expect the fans to bring maybe more goals. And I think that's, and the FDRs also show that it's more positive for attack than it is for defense. So the idea, I think, with big at the back is also where you're planning to not make any defensive transfers. So, you know, all of your assets back there are reliable. They have upside, and you don't need to chop and change them. So that's the added advantage to it as well.
Yeah, cool.
Any Benteke lovers here? That's another question. Pukki or Benteke?
Well, I mean, again, look at the fixture difficulty.
It's a little early for that kind of pain.
Are you asking me, do you want to be hung, drawn, or quartered?
Are you drunk?
all three, please. Please, no Benteke, but you can do all the three.
Well, all about, what is it, Surya, actually, to be fair. I mean, Benteke's numbers, we'll look at this next week. His numbers are insane.
Yeah, but as many as say, Kieran, all my Palace friends said, he does that every time he needs a contract.
Yeah.
He's got that contract now. Like, he's okay. He can chill.
All right, okay. So he's a bit like, is the forward version of Zaha then? Every time there's a transfer window.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye out on Michael Elise. He's only 6 mil, isn't he? So I'm interested in him. I'm interested in Eze. There's a few. Mitchell as an attacking fullback.
No, and I think this is it. But I think they're a watch and wait. I think that's what we've basically said. The conclusion we've had with Palace is a bit of a watch and wait, for sure. But look, for me, you know my view on players coming up from the Championship, it's completely different level. I've been saying it. I just don't know how much it's going to downgrade. That's how much it's going to downgrade production. I'm going to keep an eye on this, actually, going forward. I'm going to create one of my little spreadsheets and try and keep an eye on this for future reference, perhaps for next preseason. That'd be an interesting discussion. Guys, I think that covers us for this week.
It is. I'll let you do the housekeeping, but I have some news that's come in while we were live. And I thought, considering we have like 37 viewers, we might want to break...
Maybe you should have brought it when we had 50 viewers.
No, I thought those who stayed till the end deserve to hear the news first. Everyone else will find out on Twitter when they wake up anyway.
Hibbo's been released.
Yeah, Hibbo escaped. He's not being released. He won't be there on Tuesday. Not being released.
That's true. Not before Tuesday.
He's actually got an extra week in solitary now for that one dislike.
That's right.
I blame him. I think it's him somehow... But no, I'll tell you guys. So essentially, obviously, we started out the Compass Show for the first time this Tuesday again for the new season with Hibbo and Tom Stevenson. I didn't want to say who the guest was last show on Tuesday. I was still trying to get it all firmed up, but I'm really happy to say that we have an unbelievable guest with an insanely rich history as well. But not just that, a fantastic content creator. So we actually have a fellow hub writer, FPL Salah, so Abdul to many of you. He'll be joining us on Tuesday with Gabriel, so FPL Lens and I. And while Hibbo is still locked in his dungeon somewhere, Lens and I will speak to FPL Salah and we will ask him about his illustrious record. So yeah, really looking forward to that.
Hibbo's trying to chew through his chains right now to get out to talk with
he sent us the graphics with Abdul, and I'll post it after when we announce the show. And epic graphics, Hibbo, but it still doesn't get you out of jail.
At least we've given him a computer.
Yo, at least we gave him a computer. We needed the slave labor. We needed
self-serving.
But no, I'm really excited to speak to Abdul. So, like, Abdul's record, he has like 4 top 1K finishes, like 6 top 10K. I think he himself is like number 40 roughly in the Hall of Fame as well. So he's a fantastic manager as it goes.
No, and I'll have to try and get up again for it. Brilliant. Big really thing. Looking forward to it. So that's going to be 9:30. Is it again?
9:30? Again, yes. Yeah, so 9:30. So every Tuesday going forwards now, we're going to do the 9:30 show. So for anyone who felt like they were here too late tonight, don't worry, you'll be at work on Wednesday.
And speaking of the people that were here tonight, the chat has, again, as always, the chat is, not only is it like funny and fun and a bit of everything going on, it's also like the FPL contents just in the chat I find really enlightening. And shout out to Andy Martin that says that he's going to get us to 1,000 subscribers this weekend, that we deserve it. So we really appreciate those nice words.
Thank you, Andy. And it's just lovely to hear so many positive comments about what we try and do.
For like sidetracking us all the time and drinking on the side and all the not safe for work.
No, that'll never change.
This is part of the fun. We are, at the end of the day, we're quite stat heavy in some senses, but at the same time, what we try and do is make it light-hearted, but above all, and fun, but above all, we try and make it so that you guys think for yourselves, make your own decisions, as we keep saying. We do not spoon feed at Net That Hole, and I think that resonates with people, actually, you know. But no, we love it. It was almost like I was watching my son in a sporting event on Tuesday night. I absolutely loved it. I thought, boys, you know, this is a big turning point for us. And I just thought it was fabulous. And I'm really excited for the season. And I just want to say well done, mate, because I thought you were excellent as
well. Thank you so much. No, it was scary steering through the graphics, the overlays, the animations, the ads. And it was a whole new experience. But I said it earlier when we spoke to Tom, I said to him, Hibbo didn't even drink on that show, and that's unheard of. So I think we were both quite starstruck by Tom joining us, and we were so honored to have him there. And everyone who's messaged me since this week has kind of said that they learned so much from Tom. And I think that's our view. Like, we want to obviously do Hibbo and I doing the Compass show when the season starts, but the guests thing is not going to be a one-off. Like, we're definitely looking to have guests regularly, and I even have another guest lined up for the first international break. But again, I won't tell you who that is.
In fact, I think we've got more than one guest lined up, pretty much. I think
today in the chat just kind of invited themselves, and I'm very happy to invite Late Riser Pranil to one of the shows.
Brilliant. No, we'll definitely. No, of course. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. No, I'd love it. Love it if you join. Right, guys, let's get us out of here. 2:07. It's been a long one, but you know what? As always, bite-sized chunks. Take us in bits. Take us when you're walking the dog. Take us when you're having a glass of wine like Nima, or down in gin and tonics.
Like Nima said, draw us up and quarter us, and then take us in little bite-sized chunks.
Drawn and quartered. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's dreadful. Anyway, right,
you lost 7 views just from that line.
Yeah,
you got 3 more thumbs down.
Oh my god. Right, anyway.
Wrap it up.
Please subscribe, please hit the bell. You'll find me on Twitter at FPL Mariner, Gabe at FPL Lens, Nima at FPL, is it at FPL Nima?
Soon to be FPL Pikachu.
FPL Pikachu, I love it. Don't forget to join Nima and Gabe this week with Abdul, FPL Sala, on Tuesday, 9:30. And apart from that, not a great deal else to say. But thank you very much, and good day, good afternoon, or good night. Bye-bye.
Peace out.